This is the best of RSN Central, so thanks for listening. And don't forget to join us from Monday to Friday on RSN 927 from 10:30 to 1. And if you miss anything from RSN Central, head to our website at rsn.net.au or subscribe to RSN Central on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts and iHeartRadio.
RSN Central, brought to you by TAB. Long may we play. Gamble responsibly. Gambler's Help, 1-800-858-858.
But our first guest now is Paddy Steinford. Now, he was the first draft pick in 1996 at the Richmond Football Club. And it is fair to say his football career didn't quite go to plan. But what Paddy has done off the footy field has been pretty remarkable for a boy from Glen Waverley. Paddy gets paid to improve the performance of some of the best athletes in the world. He's worked as a high-performance manager at the Adelaide Football Club before leaving to America to work as the performance coach for the Philadelphia Eagles in the NFL. He was head of the mental performance at the Toronto Blue Jays in Major League Baseball and is currently the Director of Performance and Leadership Development at the Philadelphia 76ers. And he joins us now on RSN Central. Hello to you, Paddy. Thanks for joining us.
G'day, Hawley. Thanks for having me.
Mate, what happened with your football career at Richmond?
I think you summed it up well. It definitely didn't go according to plan. There was a number of injuries. We had, I actually had three different head coaches in the 5 years that I was at Richmond. So a lot of changes going on. And I didn't really get a run at it. So the one or two opportunities I did have, I probably didn't play as well as I would have liked, and then that was that. At the time, I hated it, but things have turned out okay.
How did you get into what you're doing right now, and what was the inspiration behind that?
Partly from when I was a player, I looked at different, I tried to leave no stone unturned, and one of the areas was the mental side of the game that I really got right into. I then went on and finished the physiotherapy degree. So that kind of combined and crossed over a little bit. And to be honest, there was probably a catalyst for it when I was at the Crows. I was there as the leadership development manager, as they called it, but it was basically the PDM of that team plus a little bit of leadership coaching and then led into high performance manager a few years down the track. And one of the things that we were dealing with while I was there was that they had they'd been fined for the Kurt Tippett salary cap saga. When I was there. And we lost our first two draft picks for 2 years in a row. And so in my position, my job was to try and take some guys who had fallen into the third round and make them the equivalent value of the first rounder. And with that, I started digging back into my stuff from my playing time around the mental side of the game, and I discovered a few researchers here in America who I set out to talk with, and then one thing led to another. I ended up over here, partly off the back of some inspiration from Dean Bailey, who I spent a lot of time with before he passed away, and then probably a little bit of a coincidence as well in that when I started really connecting with people over here, the Crows unfortunately fired the only head coach I ever worked with in the AFL, which was Brenton Sanderson, and I was able to get a payout. So that sort of propelled me over here, and I haven't been back since.
I want to touch on Dean Bailey. I read an article that you penned about his wonderful life and the way that his great mate Phil Walsh talked about him at his funeral. What made Dean Bailey such a wonderful coach, and why was he so special to you, Paddy?
Probably a number of reasons on the second question. I'll get to that in a bit. But you ask anyone who worked with Bales, who had him as a coach, whether it was head coach in Melbourne or as an head assistant in Adelaide or anywhere. I think he was at Essendon before all that. And to a man, not almost everyone. Everyone will say he was about as authentic as you can get. Rarely did he lead you up the garden path. He didn't have much pretense about him, and he was genuinely interested in the lives of the young men that he was responsible for. A lot of the Crows guys would eat at his place for dinner. He'd go around, he'd have them around, and his wife Karen and their two sons would basically take some of the players in as de facto extra kids, I guess. And that's for guys who are living interstate and they're only young adults. Bales was just amazing on that front. You know, he was passionate about being as good as possible and working hard, and he wanted to win as much as the next guy. But what set him apart was how human he was, and how much he really cared for the humans he was taking care of.
Was he ahead of his...
Sorry, what was that?
I was just... Keep going, mate. I was just going to say, was he ahead of his time with the way that he looked after people when he was coaching them?
You could almost say it was a throwback. Like, he was... It was like what you'd expect when... And I, thanks to my average football career, I had the experience of going down to the state league level and shipping over to play in South Australia. And the way they have to look after their people on the human side, because they can't pay them, it's kind of like a throwback to an older era when you'd move and they'd try and get you a job and they'd get you set up and create a community. That's really what Bales, what I saw in him when we were working at the Crows. For your second part of your question about why he meant so much to me or why I connected with him, like, one of my first experience, that was my first ever job in professional sport as a full-time job with a team. And I'm moving over to Adelaide and I get an email the day before my flight. Here's your flight details. By the way, Dean Bailey has said you can bunk with him until you get a spot sorted. And so next thing I know, I'm living with Dean Bailey, who had just been let go from Melbourne not too long before that. I didn't really know what to expect. And he was phenomenal in terms of the way he took me in as just a fellow coach, but also, you know, taught me some stuff about the league, and he was just amazing on that front. And one of the things we did share in common was our interest in the mental side of the game. And he would often say that's going to be it's going to be a point of difference, that the teams can get ahead of the curve on that. So he kind of was ahead of the curve in the way he thought about that, for sure.
In America, that you've worked with NFL clubs, Major League Baseball club, and of course you're working with the 76ers right now, and you worked in the AFL. Are all sports people, doesn't matter what sport they play, are they all wired the same, or is baseballers different to basketballers, and basketballers different to American footballers?
They're basically the same. Like, everyone who's in professional sport is a competitor to some degree. And as with what we have back home in an AFL team, there can be some really competitive dudes, and there can be just be some good dudes who happen to be good at what they do. And I'd say, you know, the difference between baseball and American football is similar to the difference between cricket and football. Whilst, you know, from a personality point of view, you'll have a normal bell curve, and at one end there's a couple of people who you wouldn't want to date your sister, and then there's a couple of people at the other end that you'd want to marry your sister. Same sort of thing over here in terms of the type of humans and the quality of people that you get around a sports team. But yeah, there are different quirks. It takes a different cat to stand around a field for 3 hours or longer in cricket, but 3 hours in baseball, than it does for a guy who gets on the court for maybe 30 minutes total in an NBA basketball game.
0416905052 to join the conversation. Our special guest here on RSN Central this morning is the Performance and Leadership Development Officer there at the Philadelphia 76ers. Paddy, what are your KPIs? What do you want to achieve within a year, say, with the 76ers?
It's a good question, Ollie. It really depends on which part of my role we're looking at. So, as you said, there's two parts of it. One is performance and one is leadership development. And it's probably more indicative of the performance side, in that, you know, in order to really work on that front, there's got to be good relationships with the players, for them to open up, for them to trust you enough to talk about things that they may not talk about with a coach or with their own teammate even. So number one KPI there is developing trust. And then number two is the ability to actually get guys to commit to plans and have regular review systems, which is an ongoing work in progress, because the landscape here is really, really different than what it has been, you know, back home in Australia. On the leadership front, it's much more about working with the coaches and, you know, the more prominent players. And in reality, the one main thing that we're looking for there is just regular conversations and the ability to have an open environment where the people who are the centres of influence, the captain, the coach, have a clear picture and an agreed picture of what sort of culture they want, and then they have channels of communication to help shape that a little bit.
What's what kind of culture do sporting organisations want or need?
It differs. You know, there are, you can take two examples here of teams that have been super successful in the NBA. One is the Golden State Warriors, who are the most recent dynasty, and then prior to that was the San Antonio Spurs. When you speak to people who have been at both organizations, they're incredibly different. The Warriors was very free-flowing, happy-go-lucky, let's all enjoy our basketball and express ourselves. And the Spurs was very, you know, pound the rock, consistency, sacrifice, selflessness. And not that both teams didn't have components of the other, but the specifics of what the culture is about is less important than the fact of both of those teams had their best player, was their best person, and they lined up with the coach. And when you can have that, when your most important player has the same value set up as the coach, and they are both incredible people, then it's really hard to go wrong.
We've seen the success of the Richmond Football Club here in this country over the last 3 or 4 years. And when you listen to Damien Hardwick and Trent Cotchin and even Dusty Martin at times, they talk about embracing their vulnerabilities. How important is that, Paddy?
Hugely important. It's something that you can't, it's really hard to quantify, but in terms of the ability to, for anyone to get better at their job, for them to accept feedback and for them to be okay with making mistakes, it has a ripple effect of, I can take feedback because I don't feel like I have to be perfect. I'm allowed to be vulnerable and not, you know, and allow myself to be not perfect in the eyes of my peers. So I can take feedback and I can get better. And also it then reduces some of the anxiety on the big stage where I don't feel like my value as a person is defined by whether or not I play well today or whether or not I'm the best player that everyone thinks I can be. And when you have that, it allows people to go out and do their job without staking their entire life on it, and it just turns the pressure needle down a little bit, which usually, over the long run and on the biggest stages, allows them to play as well as possible.
How do you teach that to someone like a Benny Simmons when he's got a lot of pressure on him, he's worth millions of dollars, and everybody expects him to dominate a basketball match every time he steps out onto that court?
Yeah, it's less about teaching someone that and more about creating the environment around them as best as possible. We definitely have those sort of conversations, and it's something that we're constantly trying to pull back to, because the world around these athletes and these leagues and these teams is out of control. The show Entourage or the show Jerry Maguire, they're not too far from reality in terms of the sort of stuff that goes on behind the scenes and away from the game. And so it's less about teaching them stuff and more about being consistent with the support you put around them and the sort of conversations that we try and have regularly.
RSN Central, brought to you by TAB. Long may we play. Gamble responsibly. Gamblers Help, 1-800-858-858.
Matty Nevitt joins me now. The Hornet, you could listen to him all day.
Oh, you could. What a cool job as well, yeah. Gareth. Some people just, they strike gold with the jobs they get to land in sport, and that would be a pretty special role to have at an amazing organisation.
And Mikey Velasaris joins us. Good morning, Mikey. You're a basketball fan. Obviously, Joel and Ben, that's all rubbish regarding their friction. It's just a beat up by the media.
Media always have to, play a role, and that's the one role that they've tried to play this season is to, put a rift between those two stars. But yeah, as a 76ers fan, I've obviously in depth a massive fan, and no, it's not true at all.
0416905052 to join the conversation today, which is, what is your favourite sporting precinct or venue? It comes after Royal Melbourne's West Course is still the nation's best golf layout, according to the Australian Golf Digest. So maybe it's a country football ground. Maybe it's the MCG. Some say the Adelaide Oval. It could be a basketball arena. Mm. Do you have one, Matty?
When the MCG's packed, there's nothing like it. I can't. There'll be people trying to compare that ground with others in Australia, but the MCG, when it is packed and roaring with two local Melbourne sides, there's nothing quite like it. In terms of where else I've been in the world that I've thoroughly enjoyed, Wimbledon holds a special place in my heart, being a tennis lover, and you walk in into those grounds and you can smell the freshly cut grass, and it's got that sort of aura about it. You know, it's a pretty special place. In terms of one that I would love to go to, I think obviously Augusta is the one that's near the top of everyone's bucket list, so that would certainly be high. Do you know another one that's a bit left field that I'd love to go and watch? Jay Bay in South Africa and watch the surfing.
With the sharks.
Yes.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
I love the Broom Turf Club with the Indian Ocean to the backdrop. It's such a wonderful place to watch races on a dirt track. But it's one hell of a venue to watch a sporting contest. Mm. I'm trying to think outside the square a little bit. There's plenty of country football grounds that are so picturesque and beautiful to play. I went and played a game of cricket at my old school, Assumption College, the other day. And walking onto that ground, it gave me a feeling that it was my favourite sporting ground to play sport on. So there could be something a little bit different outside the square for some people. Like I hated playing at City Oval in the Ballarat Football League.
It's a shocker.
Terrible ground.
It has been done up.
It has. It's cold and miserable most of the time. And when you look around it, it's just brick walls.
Mm, yep.
Yeah. The Store Gift's a beautiful place to watch a sporting contest. And some good news over the last 20 to 48 hours that the Gift will be held once again.
Yeah, that's right. Good news. Like you said, it's a magnificent event and you can get to watch it for another 4 years. So a $1.22 million package has been announced there from the state government to pretty much guarantee that event for the coming years until the end of 2023. It'll also maintain the prize money. So $40,000 for the men and the women remains. And I think what else is important is that Channel 7 will continue to broadcast the event for the next couple of years. And that's crucial because you need to have that exposure on free-to-air television.
We'll cross out the Julian DeStoop shortly because he's at Richmond for this intra-club match today. What can you tell us?
Well, I can tell you that there's one side there in the intra-club which is significantly more packed with talent than the other side. So maybe that's an indication of who's in line for a round one berth. I do know one of those sides has a three-pronged attack with Revolt, Martin and Lynch all playing up forward. So surprise, surprise, they're up by about 30 points early in the second quarter.
Yep.
But yeah, if you're in the Punt Road area, get down and watch the premiers in action.
Who would you prefer to play on?
Out of who?
Out of Martin, three. Lynch or Revolt?
Probably Revolt because he plays a bit further up the ground these days. Less likely to kick a bag on you.
The Hornet says to Damien Hardwick, I'll play in an intra-club match and I'll go straight to Revolt.
I don't think anyone would want Dusty to take him to the square, would they?
And the Formula One, the testing ahead of 2020, this basically tells you who will be winning and who won't be winning.
Who's got the fastest cars going around? Yeah. Well, again, surprise, surprise, Lewis Hamilton topped that this morning. Daniel Ricciardo, pretty happy with the way his Renault went around. He was the second of the Renault drivers to jump in that car. Finished seventh, so posted the seventh fastest time there in Barcelona. But I think he's relatively pleased that they've made some significant changes to the car and he's confident that it can stand up heading into season 2020.
I got into trouble from a few of our listeners and some people got in contact with me on social media that I was too harsh on Daniel Ricciardo.
You were?
Yeah, I was probably, yeah. Mm-hmm. I apologise then. I love Daniel.
He's one of our biggest sports stars.
Is he?
I think he is. That's it's a sport that is so high up in the sort of global recognition thing. He's a star within it. I think he actually gets undersold as how big a star he is in Australia.
We need to take a break. Thank you, Maddie.
Good on you, Gareth.
RSN Central, brought to you by TAB. Long may we play. Gamble responsibly. Gambler's Help, 1-800-858-858.
It's the fifth quarter with Gareth Horn, Mikey Valisaris and Benny Day. This is the team that puts this show together each and every day. Benny Day, hello to you.
Gareth, g'day.
Hello to you, Mikey, once again. And Hornet, look at the big smile on his face. You're up and about today, Hornet.
Been a very good show, Gareth. I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
You just penned a story on Surprise Baby, your favourite stayer.
Well, he's my favourite star. Yeah. And I have penned a story on him, and you won't be seeing him in the autumn this year.
Okay.
Most likely, anyway. I spoke to Paul Peruska, who's super confident with the way that he's come back. This was his words. He said he's come back looking like a machine.
Okay.
And he is eyeing off that 2020 Melbourne Cup. But obviously, he doesn't really gain anything from winning races in the autumn, other than prize money. But if he wants to win the Melbourne Cup, it's only going to hinder his chances. So he'll just wait and wait and wait until probably the Dardo Tan Chin Nam. I think it's now called the Fan Stakes, early in the spring to kickstart his campaign. But yeah, keeping things very, very quiet at the moment with the baby, but he is flying.
Is that an educated type of set out plan for surprise baby because he doesn't want to win too many races because of the weight?
You'd think so.
For the Melbourne Cup?
He did say that he also goes better with a bit of give out of the track as well. So implying that the tracks in the early part of the spring compared to obviously Melbourne's autumn will likely suit him more as well. But yeah, you'd think that he's got no advantage of winning a race in the lead up.
Unbelievable, these young kids these days, Benny Day. Like, I know that Manny produced Racing Pulse today, but he's kept that story exclusive to himself.
I love the way that he went about it.
Just quiet.
Finished with Felgate's show. He ducked off to the desk. He penned that little story. He spoke to Paul. It's good.
Well, so I'm supposed to give everyone else the stories. Well, is that what you're saying?
Gareth, I've got a great story. Miles, I've just wrote this article. Can we get Paul Peruska on the line to tell us about Surprise Baby? I think there's
a time and a place. With plenty of opportunities for us to speak to Paul.
Hey, what's your favourite sporting venue?
There's lots. I think being a rugby league tragic, all of the local suburban grounds in Sydney for mine. You know, I'm a Sharkies fan, so Shark Park. Leichhardt Oval on a Saturday afternoon, they put the full up at about 6.5. And if you don't have a seat, there's opportunities for you to sit in the old fig trees at the end there on the hill. North Sydney Oval, Henson Park, which is the home of the Ipswich, the Newtown Jets, rather. Mm-hmm. There's lots and lots of those grounds in Sydney that, you know, I just think I miss about not being in Sydney. And I wish that the AFL would do the same thing, you know, here and take some of the games, not all of them, but just some of the games, maybe two rounds a year away from the big venues. And, you know, I just think it's sort of, there's something nice, there's something nostalgic about being able to wander to a neighbourhood oval, have a beer on the way, get a beer and a hot dog, sit on the hill, that the AFL doesn't do as well as they do in Sydney. And I know it's because of crowds and it's because of broadcast rights and whatnot, but yeah, there's still something super attractive about local fields.
I can understand where you come from there, but the AFL will say, well, our game's outgrown those suburban ovals.
Of course, of course.
But I agree with you there. I remember when I was in Manly and I knew a couple of the players anyway. We went into the sheds.
At Brookvale.
And you had Jamie Lyon, the skipper, and he came out. And I think they'll play Newcastle. Danny Badouris, was it? He was the captain as well.
Yeah.
And they would go out and they'd just have a chat in the club rooms, in the sheds, just before they would go out and play. You could smell the deep peat.
Absolutely.
You could smell the pies. It reminded me of the good old-fashioned days of football. Like in country footy too, when you walk into, there's nothing better than the smell of a change room.
And I think you're so close to the action in those suburban grounds as well. That's something that's a little bit lost, I think, in the modern-day venues.
Do you get that at North Ballarat Roosters?
That smell that you're...
Yeah, or in the Resies, is it not? No, that's a bit harsh.
The Metzl. I love the smell.
The North Ballarat change rooms are pretty damn good at the moment, Gareth.
So, they are, aren't they?
They're not like those old ones with the brick buildings and the damp, dank smell sort of reeks through the building. But I know what you're saying, that it does bring that sort of nostalgic feeling back to you when you walk into a country footy ground and you can smell it.
When I walked in today, and we're about to have our production meeting, which we do every day, Benny says, Gareth, have you read the Herald Sun yet? Have you read this story? Page number... You have to turn a few pages here. I thought it was a little closer. Page number 60, Russell Gould. I did some bad things. Rugby offered him a lifeline. Now Rebels prop has found his place. It's a story on the prop, Matty Gibbons, who was from New South Wales. And Benny, when you read this story, it's hard to comprehend, really.
It's a pretty emotional story, isn't it?
Yeah.
Had two parents with disabilities. His mum had cerebral palsy. His dad was injured in a car accident. His grandparents lived nearby. He was sort of, you know, between his parents and his grandparents, looked after until he was 10, and then his grandparents actually stepped in when he was 10 and took over that full time. His granddad was a rugby union coach, thought that would be a good way to give Matt and his brother Alex some discipline. You know, they'd seen some pretty awful things. You know, there were some unsavoury types, if you like, that were probably mixing with his parents, taking advantage of his parents because they didn't know any better. And, you know, he and his brother, they both ended up on rugby union scholarships at one of the, like, the preeminent, probably, rugby nursery grounds in Brisbane, Nudgee College. And, you know, went on to play sevens. Matt's debuted, or his run on debut last year for the Rebs, saw him play a few games and then, you know, get a call up to the Wallabies training squad ahead of the Japan World Cup. I mean, it's an extraordinary story to see where he's come from, you know, to now.
I think the paragraph that gets me, it's about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe the sixth paragraph. It reads, Chrissy, which is Matt's mum, was born with cerebral palsy and has the mental and emotional capacity of a 10-year-old. Chris was in a car accident, his father as a child, and received some severe brain damage. And he had, I think, a similar emotional capacity than his wife. And it makes you think then, how did they allow them to have children and then look after them until they were 10 years of age?
I think I think the article says that they were encouraged not to.
Yeah.
They wanted to. With the backing of the grandparents there to say, look, we'll step in if things go awry, which is what they did. It's a remarkable read. Great to get Russell on at some stage to kind of explore that article a little bit more. And I think if we can, Gaz, I think it'd be a really, a really good Friday lunch opportunity to speak to Matt before a home game of the Rebs one Friday, if we can line that up. But it's extraordinary.
I think these human interest stories, I will follow the rugby. Like, the Rebels haven't been on my radar this year because I'm not, like, rugby is a sport that I enjoy sometimes, but it's not, like, high on my agenda. And they haven't really taken my attention just yet. But a story like this, I will watch the Rebels and I'll see how this young kid goes. And then I think it proves in most sports, and this is a story that it's an extraordinary yarn. But if you can find those human interest stories in any sport, especially racing, people can identify with that. I think the alligator blood story is a perfect example of this. The story behind that horse, the David Van Dyke, the recovering heroin addict, turning his life around, the horse's story regarding the owners and one of them battling cancer. People can not necessarily follow horse racing, but they read that story and then they watch that horse at Flemington on Saturday.
That's well said. And I think what it also does is it highlights the importance of journalism. And a lot of people can be critical of the media, critical of journalism. But when you read an article like that, you realise how important it is for people to be able to tell stories. And like you said, Gareth, for then to us be able to then connect with the athlete and learn about them. Like you said, the Melbourne Rebels probably haven't been on our radar at all. But all of a sudden on Saturday when they play, you have a little bit more interest in them. You've learnt about their story, about their backstory and their playing group. And that's exactly why journalism holds such an important role in society.
And this is why, and hopefully we'll get better and we try and aim to make this show like a storytelling show where everybody has a story. And it may not necessarily be a professional athlete or one of the big name horse trainers, but those stories from Buck in there the other day that we can have the platform to tell those stories. But even I was talking to a chap there recently regarding country football stories, like some legend Bush stories before war, after war, like kicking 200 goals a season, and everybody knows their story. So there's some remarkable yarns out there that need to be told. Inspiring.
I liked the Phil Duggan story yesterday, Gaz. I'm Batman. I mean, what a story that is. I don't know if that's ever been done before. You just decide to pack up, pop two horses in a float, take a caravan around the country and race that horse where you can.
I thought it was, when I heard of that story, Benny, I thought it was more of the story where Phil just wanted to take the wife and the couple of horses and see a bit of Australia. But he's actually chucked he's thrown the toys out of the car. because the handicapping system, he's not happy with it.
He wasn't happy with it.
So he's gone halfway around the country to find a suitable race. Now, if he's your trainer, geez, you appreciate his
commitment
to his horse. But boy, I'd hate to see the bill at the end of the day. Yeah. The petrol price, it'll be worth a little bit. There's a few SMSs coming through. Watching the Warrnambool on the hill in the Grand Annual.
Yeah.
Something quite special.
Tony from Kilmore says, the best place to watch any sporting event, top of the hill at Bathurst.
RSN Central, brought to you by TAB. Long may we play. Gamble responsibly. Gambler's Help, 1-800-858-858.
Here is the top 10 after the voting of the All-Star Mile. No surprises here, Alligator Blood. 2, Melody Bell. 3, Colding. 4, Star Missile. 5, Dalasan. 6, Catalyst. So the three-year-olds are in. Mr. Quickie, 7. Aristia. So they'll be over the moon at the farm there.
Living Legends.
At Living Legends. So they're guaranteed, what, 10,000?
Yep.
So well done there to the team there at Living Legends. Heart of Poissance, 9. And Super Seth, 10. So that means Blackheart Bart misses out. So obviously Lindsay's 10% didn't work. Mm. Who else misses out?
Well, Goldfields misses
out. Yeah, unfortunately for Logan McGill, Goldfields is not there. They tell me they skydived and came down.
Is that the same 10 that were in the top 10 before the blackout?
I don't know. Hey, Benny, can you just see if you can get Greg Carpenter on the line? We might see what he has to say. I know it's quickly approaching 1 o'clock. And they just had the All-Star Mile announcement. So they tell me skydivers jumped out of a plane.
That's what I was hearing.
Yeah.
Too.
And obviously the Blood's number one. I don't like if Alligator Blood, for instance, mm-hmm. and there was reports that he pulled up, he was tired after the CSA Stakes.
Understandably.
So if he goes to the Guineas and has another gut buster.
Yep.
David Van Dyke has said all along that the horse will tell me if he needs the paddock. Yeah. So I think he's, like, I'd love to see him in the All-Star Mile, but I don't think he's 100% guaranteed to go there.
Well, even if he runs well in the Guineas.
And Super Seth's not going there, I don't think.
We'll say Catalyst knocks over Alligator Blood in the Guineas.
Yeah.
And, you know, by a decent margin is enough to say, righto, Catalyst has got his measure over a mile. You probably can't envisage a situation where David Van Dyke sends Alligator Blood to the All-Star Mile. Like, he's not going to go there to run second.
Oh,
I think he'd have to nearly win the Guineas.
Do you think so?
Well, he's had a long preparation. Yeah.
Well, the top 10 there. So I don't think there's any real surprises. But Greg Carpenter, the man behind the All-Star Mile, the GM of racing at Victoria Racing, and he joins us now. Greg, hello. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure, Gareth. My head's still spinning a little bit. We've just unveiled the top 10 and had 10 high-octane skydivers alight from a plane on a very windy Melbourne day at Caulfield, and I've never seen them do their landings like that before. So they've all landed safely, and the top 10 have been revealed, but it was just a sensational promo.
I can't wait to see that on the nightly news bulletins tonight. We've just read out the top 10. Is there any real surprises or big movers, Greg?
Well, I think what had happened over the blackout period this year is that there weren't any big movers. And in actual fact, Super Seth, who's ended up in 10th place, ended up drawing away from Goldfield slightly. So I think the margin there was about 600 votes in the end.
Okay.
And some of the last-minute pushes that we thought might have come for Galaxy Raider, as an example, didn't quite gather enough momentum for the top 10 to be shifted. So it's a really fantastic blend of 6 Group 1 winners. Outside of the Group 1 winners are Alligator Blood, who hasn't actually got a Group 1 on his CV at this stage. So that just gives you an indication of the depth. And probably the Cinderella Story horses this year are Star Missile and Heart of Poissons. So the quality of the field, as far as Group 1 winners, has risen considerably with the changes we've made over the last 12 months. But it did still show that if you ran a good campaign, as Star Missile and Heart of Poissons did, you still were a chance to get into the top 10.
So unfortunately for Tassie, they'll have to hope for a wild card with Mandela Effect. WA need Regal Power, who goes around on Saturday. If he wins, he'll be, I would imagine, high up on the wild card list there to get a start for WA. No Blackheart Bart. So, but apart from that, we're nearly represented by nearly every state or country in Australasia.
As we mentioned yesterday, now that we've got the top 10 in place, the focus will switch to the top five. You've mentioned, the five wildcards. You've mentioned Blackheart Bart. He's an outstanding horse who's really popular with the race fans right around Australia. So if he runs well in the futurity, love to see him win it because that would guarantee a wild card. But even if he runs well, he'll be in line for it. Fierce Impact, we know he was great in the North Stakes, so he'd be in line for a wild card. If Sun Superstorm, the horse from Perth, runs well in the Guineas, he's a chance. And as we work through, maybe we will get down to horses like Goldfields or Mandela Effect. But there's still a lot to play out over the next 3 weeks.
Can't wait. So when, and obviously there's horses that are continuing on their campaign, and we just mentioned that I know David Van Dyke and the Connections would love to get to the All-Star Mile, but even though weighing up, I think only yesterday they officially confirmed their plans to move on to the Australian Guineas because it took him a little while to come good after that terrific effort in the CSA Stakes. So if you're not in the top 10 and you're an owner listening here, you can't give up the fight just yet.
Absolutely not, because as I said, we've got the wild cards, but we've also have a list of emergency runners going forward that if Super Seth heads to Sydney or an Alligator Blood doesn't come through the Guineas, they might choose to take a break. So it can change. I would have to say that the owner of Alligator Blood has just announced that one of the people who have voted for them will get 5% of prize money won by the horse on the day. So, you know, all of these 10 horses are wanting to run in the All-Star Mile. They're intending to run in the All-Star Mile, but they're not Formula One cars, and owners and trainers will always put their horses' welfare in place of first and foremost. So these are the 10 that are locked in at the moment. Things can change. So please, please don't give up. If you're still flirting or aspiring to an All-Star Mile start, there's still a lot of water to play under the bridge over the next 3 weeks.
I'm happy. Catalyst, I voted for Catalyst. I can give that away now, I think. He's in, so I'm the chance to win $250,000. So I've got a smile on my face. Anyway, hey, Greg, the only thing I'm disappointed with is that we didn't see you jump out of the plane. Now, is there any chance you being the face and the voice of this All-Star Mile? I think you probably needed to go out on a limb and deliver the goods for us.
Well, I went out on a limb a couple of years ago with the Melbourne Cup trophy off the sky deck, and that's about as good as I get. I'm not a good flyer. I'm certainly not a good jumper out of a plane. And I think I mentioned to Richo and the crowd here today that I woke up very happily 2 Tuesdays ago because I was dreaming I had to jump out of the plane to promote the All-Star Mile. And I was at that stage in the dream and I woke up and realised it was just that, a dream. It will not be happening, Gareth. It will not happen.
Good on you, Greg. There we go. The much-anticipated top 10 revealed. We appreciate your time.
Thanks and look forward to the racing at Caulfield this Saturday. Yep.